But last time we talked about, we looked at some questions, six discussion questions, and we looked at some scriptures. We get down to the third one, which we looked at Ephesians 4:31. This will be probably the third week, but second week of review. But we talked about in Ephesians 4:31 how we are to put away bitterness and anger or wrath, clamor, slander, malice, and I went through those, and we defined them, get a little more understanding of what the words meant. And bitterness, we talked about that, was that just a harshness or acridity, long-standing resentment, and so on. And that kind of had a venomous idea to it, venom like a serpent or a spider. And then the second one in that list is wrath, and I think it was Chris made the point that if you look at those attributes of in this text, they sort of progress. It starts out with bitterness, and then it progresses to anger, wrath, and that's that strong passion or rage emotion that comes up, that sudden boiling up and over explosive outburst of anger. Then we looked at anger, and that builds on from wrath, anger, and that impulse to just explode, deep-seated and continuous attitude of anger and resentment. And then his clamor was an outcry, just a crying out of out of the mouth. It's vocal, loud, noisy, boisterous, that kind of thing. So you see the progression. Begins with bitter, and then before you know it, you're just launching. And that can take time to happen as we bubble up in our own hearts and think about bitterness. It's a root of bitterness, but sometimes it's quick. It just comes out. But typically when there's an anger issue, there's something going on inside that has launched that. It's that bitter spirit, that bitter heart, that resentment. And so then we looked at slander. Blasphemia is the word. That's a word we hear some in the scriptures often, blasphemy. Blaspheming Christ, blaspheming his word. It's that slander, abusive speech or railing, evil speaking. And it kind of has words of injury to another person, whether the character, typically it's character, character assassination, to curse people. And then we looked at malice, meaning this idea of wickedness or evil. It's a depravity coming out, just evil disposition, ill will, the malicious desire to inflict harm upon upon someone. So that's and then we're going to look today at James chapter 1. Excuse me. James chapter 1, 19 and 20, we're spending our time there today. And and so as we look to build bridges, not walls, that's our theme here right now, communication and marriage. But, you know, because we're in the marriage mode here, we talked about husbands' roles and wives' roles and so all of that, and we're in the marriage part of the restoring families and, following God's compass for a godly family, husband and wife. And this is typically, a lot of this is geared towards husband and wife relationships because we're running elbow to elbow all the time. We have different dispositions, different strengths and weaknesses, male to female, they're different. We're just different by design. And so we come at life from different viewpoints. And so it's important that we went through the roles of husband and wife, and how God and Paul wrote that for God's instruction to us. But this point here, this idea that as I talk about building bridges, this is for any relationship, right? It's not only husband and wife, but that's been our focus, as I said, but this is any relationship, peer to peer. This is important as we seek to communicate with one another. You know, I can't read minds. You know, I joke about it. You know, and there's a misunderstanding. I did not pass read mind reading 101. I failed it miserably. So we have to keep that in mind. We're not mind readers of one another. We're not inside each other's head. So it's so important to focus on how we communicate. And so James chapter 1, 19 and 20 is timeless instruction on this. It's communication, self-control, and it's critically important to remember these things in the context of marriage especially, but also any, as I said, any relationship. This transcends all human-to-human relationship. And so we want to look at being slow to speak, slow to anger, communication in our relationships. And so James says here, this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be slow to speak, must be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, for the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. And that's what we're about as believers. We want to achieve the righteousness of God. That's our goal, is holy living. We've been made holy in Christ, right? He never sees us any more or less holy than we are in position, but there's that day-to-day, the sanctification process, which is we clean up the dirtiness, right? To sanctify holy. We want to be holy. So we got to get that off of us, and it's a day-to-day, long-term life process of sanctification, cleaning up our life for God's glory. And he gives us the word, obviously. He gives us Christ as the example, and he gives us one another to help us be holy, right? As I said before, holiness comes. And marriage is not to make us holy, although it can. It's to make us happy. It's to make us holy. And so it's our sanctifying. We want to sanctify one another. And so that's our goal here, is to just look at this. And so the idea here in James, where he says, this you know, my beloved brethren, but everyone must be quick to hear. And that word must be, it carries the idea of is either to be in existence and in reality and now, but it's also a becoming, has a becoming idea to it. So we must be becoming quick to hear. And that's just a process. We're in process. You got to become a good hearer. Then that takes learning. It takes discipline. And then he says, slow to speak, slow to anger. So we're going to look at one of these. And then look at the end. He says, the anger of man does not achieve what? Righteousness. So if we're angry, not righteous, and we want to be righteous. So the core theme here of 19 and 20, it offers us a clear direction, right, and path for managing conflict and peace in all relationships. For married couples especially, it's a call to listen first. How many of you are great listeners? How about good listeners? How about, we got one hand. We're working on being a good listener. All hands should go up, right? We want to be working at mediocre. Yeah, there is variations, right? So we're all looking to become a better hearer, better doer of the word. So that's our path. That's our call to do that. So, but we want to manage conflict in our homes and peace. In all relationships, it's a call to listen first, speak slowly, right in the order. It's right in your text. You can read it right there. And it's in order. Quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. And so we have to use self-control. That's a fruit of the Spirit, right? So it's one of the fruits. And so to keep instructions positive and centered on interactions. Sorry, read my notes here. This keeps interactions positive and centered on Christ when we focus on this. So look at a breakdown here of James 1, 19 through 20. I have there's three sections to my notes here. The first one is a quick breakdown of James 1, 19. And then the second point is the implications of this instruction in the context of marriage, or in the context of relationships. And the third section of the notes was some discussion points. We'll look at some discussion things to discuss about this text. So so a breakdown of point number one, a breakdown of James 1, 19 and 20. The verse breaks down into three key commands by a strong warning here in this text. So what are the commands? Well, the first one is quick to hear. This idea calls for active listening. Active listening. You know, you looking at the person, engaged in the person's what they're saying, seeking to learn and understand. And I think I fail at this sometimes. I can get off and daydream if something is being communicated to me. Not so much, you know, as time goes on. And someone goes, I've talked to people, they've gone on for a long time, and I start to lose the connection, the daydream, you know, starts to kind of come in, right? And it's a disciplining thing. It's definitely a learned skill to do that. It takes practice to do that. And and just takes focus, active listening. It means not just wanting or waiting for your turn to talk. How many times do you do that? As soon as there's a pause, I'm breaking in here. Right, listening to respond, but it's truly, it's giving your spouse or the other person full attention, full focus, and we must work to do that. It's seeking to understand their perspective and feelings completely. So in a conflict, the temptation oftentimes is to prepare a defense. We've talked about the inner lawyer. We talked about the Tripp book on marriage where he brings out that we all have that inner lawyer waiting to prosecute, right? And waiting to defend ourselves, to prosecute the other person. And so we must guard against that. It's a natural tendency to do that. And so we must be active listeners. It's not preparing a defense. James says the first priority is what? To listen. Right? It's to listen. Listen with compassion and understanding. And so that's an important aspect of this verse. The next one here in the list is being slow to speak. Slow to speak. This calls for a thoughtful response. So not to bring out the inner lawyer while a person's talking, but you want to be thinking, how can I lift up this person? How can I edify my sister or brother in this moment? Right. So we've got to put our defenses on the line, on hold. And not be thinking about a defense. So calls for a thoughtful response. And this idea of a thoughtful response prevents us from reacting instead of responding. We oftentimes react impulsively with sometimes harsh words, or I guess what you'd say today, a snarky attitude. Do we all know what snarky is? Yeah, rolling of the eyes, or just as, you know, I'll get back at you. I'll say it. Barking, right, at one another. So yeah, we got to stop the that idea of answering back, harsh words, accusations, you know, being defensive, and guarding against that. So it's a command to just pause, think. And process what's being said before responding. How would you like it if it was done to you? Right? How would you like someone to speak to you? Well, that's how we speak to one another. That's what Jesus says. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. Not as they do unto you, but as you would have them do unto you. That's difficult sometimes. Is it not? Is that easy for everybody, or is it just me? I don't know. It's not easy. So just process things and then speak. And also, the other part of it is it encourages us to choose words that build up, choose words that edify one another, not tear down. It also calls for the idea of a slow to anger emotional control. Anger is emotion. And so we're called to control our emotions. Anger is a natural human emotion. And it can be useful, but not often. I think we overuse it. It's a natural human condition, emotion, but this command is about controlling that, control the expression of anger. It also requires self-control, which is the fruit of the Spirit, right? Galatians 5:23. So there's the three points, and then the warning here that we see is the anger of man does not achieve the righteousness of God. And that's the goal that we want to do, is we want to be righteous. We want to have righteous behavior, correct behavior. So that's the goal of that command here. Human anger, especially when it's uncontrolled, is typically self-serving. You know, typically. I mean, I can be angry at abortion, right? That's a good anger, being angry at that sin. But when it's peer-to-peer and I'm angry, that's usually a selfishness. It's just selfish, you know, selfish desire to have my way, to hear my words. I want to deliver to you what's on my mind, so you must do this and you must do that for me. It's all about me, you know. And Jason, do you have a comment?
Chapter 16, because today's the 16th, one of my favorites is verse 32. It says, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city.
Hmm. That's good. That's good. That's a good good proverb. And so uncontrolled anger is typically self-serving. It's destructive. It destroys the spirit of a person, brings people down. It cuts people down, works against God's loving, patient, and righteous will for our relationships. It does not lead to positive, godly outcomes. It never does in our relationships, never. So the second point here I'd like to go over is the implications in the context of relationships. If you applying James 1, 19 through 20, it addresses some of the most common causes of marital conflict. Things like feeling misunderstood or being misunderstood. You ever been there, married couples? Not your spouse is not understanding. And so, the proverb that talks about, I think it's 18, the person who answers a matter before he hears it is foolish. It's foolishness to do that. So we need to be slow. Because the one person comes with his idea, seems right until the other examines. So there's an examination process in our communication with one another, because I don't understand what you're saying. I don't know what's in your mind. So we have to be careful to articulate carefully when we have a problem. But not only is it the point of speaking it, articulating it, what's the other piece of it? Hearing it, right? We need to be ready to hear what the other person says. And it's so important to do that, because sometimes I think I hear and I don't hear well. So feeling misunderstood, speaking without thinking, and this idea of wrath is emotional escalation. It just escalates because there's a progression here. We have to be careful. If it's escalating, if the conversation is escalating, you've done something wrong either in step one and step two. So if you feel boiling up, can we talk about this later kind of thing, or let me take a minute. And when I take the minute, I should be looking at this. How am I speaking? What am I saying? How's it coming out? And so slow to anger, quick to hear, slow to speak, slow to anger. So it's the hearing, speaking, and then responding with proper attitude. So feeling misunderstood, speaking without thinking, and emotional escalation. So we see here, I'm going to go back to quick to hear. What's the implication in a marriage context of being quick to hear? What are some of the implications with this command in marriage, quick to hear? Derek.
I think something the learning was this.
Are you turned on?
Yeah, the green
volume.
On. Yeah, there you go. Something I've been learning personally is this. I mean, I think a part of it is living with your wife in an understanding way. Just, I think, just learning to not speak a harsh word and just listen, even if they're not responding well, they're not understanding, you're not understanding or listening. I think just striving to be gentle and soft, because, I'm just being reminded to be a shepherd, to love your wife as Christ loved the church, and that means being a shepherd, and that means I need to be soft and gentle, because a gentle answer turns away wrath, and I need to remember to respond in kind and in softness, and make sure to listen with understanding, and I just speaking harshly is gonna damage her, and it's gonna in the ways. It will damage the relationship, and I need to be reminded to be just to be soft and care for her.
Yeah, we want to be menders of relationships, not destroyers of them. Yeah, that's good. Being considerate of the other person. So the idea of the implication here is confirmation and understanding. Jason, oh, he needs a mic.
You are right with the proverb about answering before. It was chapter 18. It's verse 13.
Yeah.
And it reads, if one gives an answer before he hears, it is his shame and folly.
Yeah. So we got to zip it up until we understand, right? Because we blurt out things that just are not proper. And then earlier in that proverb, he talks about if you person who separates themselves is not, it's not wise. You're just seeking your own way. Any other ideas on the idea of marital implication when it comes to being quick to hear? Joe.
I think just in that, if you think about the wording of that in a practical sense, if I'm quick to hear, I'm hearing something coming out of my wife. So if my call is to love and serve others for the sake of Christ, then I should be listening to her to find out what she needs. Even if it's a negative thing coming my way, to examine my own heart, is she right about what she's saying? Or how can I speak a word of grace to her to help her in this situation? So ultimately, if I'm quick to hear, it's not my opinion and my voice that should be being projected. It should be I'm listening to others in relationships, whether it's with my wife or it's just in general relationships with people. Hearing what can I add to this, not I want to make this about me and what I need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's good. How do you do that? How do you do it? How do you do it? How are you doing in that? I'll put you on the spot.
Excellence. I'm doing fabulous. No, I don't.
You get the pat on the back. See that? The attaboy.
And another practical thing, it doesn't even have to be an argument, but sometimes Jess will say from the kitchen, hey, do you? And I'm like, no, I told you, I don't want that. She's like, I'm not, I wasn't going to ask you about that. Which I just answered before she even finished the question, and therefore it's my shame. So just even in that, we're not even arguing, but it's like, hey, did you? No, I told you I don't need anything in market basket. No, I was going to ask you if you wanted me to make you cookies. It's like, maybe I should just keep on multiplying and let her finish.
Good
because
point.
Because at the same time, I'm not being quick to hear because I'm watching something on TV. Like, yeah. I don't want anything. Thanks. So,
no,
I'm doing excellent.
Good application. I think we can all identify with that to some degree. Right? Yeah. What did you say? What?
Oh, she said no
cookies.
She's still waiting.
All right. She went the extra mile. Yeah.
Chris
said it. Chris.
I was going to say one thing I struggle with, in my walk, is that I'm duty oriented, and it becomes hypocritical because it should be a duty and a delight. So I have to guard my heart against that, from going that route. I can do that, but the attitude is I'm doing that because I'm supposed to do it, and I'm missing the other side of it, where it should be out of love also.
Okay. So I was talking to somebody about that idea of doing duty stuff, and somewhere along the line it was misinterpreted that the one spouse was just checking, was called out, checking, you're just checking the box. From the other spouse, and the one spouse was trying to do what they were supposed to do, but it was interpreted by the other person that you're just checking off the box. And so I didn't think of it in the moment, but I should have, but I will, because I'll probably address the issue sometime. But if that is the case, say the spouse is just checking the box because, you know, spouse A said, I like this, I want that, you know, could you just not do this? And just that love, trying to love. And so if I'm just checking the box, without loving in their perspective, what should the person who, so I'm checking the box for anybody gives me some things that, you know, I bother her, whatever, you know, whatever, like I chew or breathe, whatever. And, you know, checking off the box, and she says to me, well, you know, I don't believe you're doing it out of love. You're just doing it to check the box attitude. It's like, how does she know that motive? Right? How does she doesn't. But what should be the response? At least I'm checking the box, right? We'll get to the love part. Don't worry, we'll get there. But at least be thankful that I'm checking the box. Right? There's some consideration there. So these are the things, you know, when we're interacting with one another. Look at the good, look at the positive, what good thing is coming out of this versus always wanting that next thing. You know, moving the goalposts, always moving things around. Oh, now it's not good enough. I want this now. Got to get out of that mode, that mindset. And we're easy to get to. We're easy to get to that. Because if we're exacting and we want precision, just remember, God might want that same precision from me. And I better deliver, because now I'm being a hypocrite by judging my brother because they're not. You know, it just gets very ugly very fast. Alonzo, need a mic. Where's the mic? The mic runner. Oh, Al, did you have a comment? Al, go ahead. You're next. I didn't see you over there. Blow a whistle.
Basically, our first priority in communication is to listen. And that, of course, implies to understand. If Jackie's speaking and all I hear is wah, 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 I'm not you. I'm not listening. I'm not understanding. But that's our first priority according to this passage. To listen.
Yep. Amen. Amen. We had another. Alonzo, yep.
Sometimes, you know, when I keep reminding myself, sometimes, you know, there's like you're saying, a chew or whatever it is, that, you know, whatever it is, the quirks that bothers the other person, whatever that is, that reminded myself is, you know, what if that person is gone? You know, not there anymore. And now you suddenly those moments that bothers you becomes more cherished, you know, because that's gone. And so I remind myself of that. And I'm thinking, you know what? It's just temporary, you know.
And yeah,
keeping myself reminded of that, because it's a gift that God gives us. And no matter what it is that bothers me, I should appreciate that, you know. So I keep telling myself, you know, this is temporary, you know. So anyway, this. One thing that helps me, because, you know, we're not perfect, so there's a lot of things that bothers us, but, you know, that's, we have to think of the blessings and the positive sides that we have and not take that for granted.
So, right. Yeah, it's perspective. A lot of it's just perspective. What's the big deal? What's the main thing, right? We got to keep the main thing here and be reminded of what it is. It's Christ and his glory for his sake. And so, Derek.
Yeah, just to keep the confession tour going on. I think one thing, I think sometimes we say as husbands, I want to hear you if I'm in the wrong or something. Please tell me that when it comes to a loving comment on how to improve, well, I don't do that, or respond and like, well, hold on.
That's your lawyer.
Yeah, your lawyer comes out. You're like, objection. You know, just kind of, and it's just, I mean, we say if we have those times when I think maybe there is a heart intent to want to, well, I can stand it, and then like you quickly turn, like, you know, the Dr. Jekyll and Hyde. Like, no, I'm not. You know, that's wrong. You have a wrong. Then it's just, and it's not. And even just as I learned from Debbie Cossian, we don't school the face. We don't school the face. Like, you know, our, you know, we might say, yeah, and then our face shows that we're not listening, and we're just like, okay, come on, get through with this. I don't have to listen to it anymore. I don't, you know, you're saying all the bad things about me that are, I don't like them, that are true, you know, that you're trying to help me to grow to be like Christ. And it's just such an ugly thing, especially when you know you do it. Like Joe was saying with, like, you know, oh, just the way with he said he responded. I mean, we all do that, you know, and the worst part is when you know you're doing it. That's the worst thing, too.
All right. So the implications are to quick to hear or to understand, as Al said. We are listening to understand. That's our goal, not to launch back. So practical examples in marriage, you could probably come up with a ton. But, you know, during a disagreement or a discussion, you know, stop folding the laundry and just listen if that's what you're doing in the moment. Or cooking or whatever, or you're fixing the car, stop. It'll be there in a few minutes. This is more important, right, is to communicate undistracted. So put away the whatever is, you know, turn off the TV. If that's coming up, look at your spouse, eye to eye contact. is very important, eye contact. You're connecting at the highest human level, eye to eye, face to face. Go ahead. Jess, sorry, blank. I can only fire too many things at one time. So
no, I was just
go ahead, Jess.
When you were saying that whatever you're doing in the moment, like stop. But I when you said cooking, and we've done that. Like if I'm cooking and he comes in, and it's just like if I stop, it's gonna burn. So I'm like, can you just? Is it okay to say? Okay,
of course.
I'm doing this
Can we
talk about this after? Because I won't be giving you my full attention right,
right.
now.
Right. No, if there's something that's got to be, it's time sensitive or burn sensitive, and let's wait a second and we'll talk. But also walking into that situation, realizing that I'm going to wait a minute because it's intense, right? So she has to finish her. So it's just that consideration of what's going on in the moment. My thing is when people come into a room just talking, can't you see that I'm doing something here, you know?
Amen.
Well, I don't say that, but I'm thinking it.
I was just going to say one thing, not on that, but when you had talked earlier about whoever couple year of counseling, and you talked about the fact of judging motives, I heard R.C. Sproul talk about that once, and we've had this discussion. In my own personal conviction about that, that's probably one of the most evil things you can do. That's exactly what Satan did in the garden. He judged God's motives deceivingly to Eve, and therefore Eve acted. So if I can't see your heart. So I can only see mine to the lens of Scripture. No, I'm evil. So chill out. You know, somebody sends me a text message and I read it. Oh, really? That's judging motives. That's evil. That's what Satan wants. That causes division. I'm putting words in your mouth, or I'm putting an attitude in the way that you said something. So, you know, like I said, that for me, personal conviction is that I never want to judge somebody's motive.
Right.
I want to hear what they say. I want to see what they do. And, you know, even if it's an unbeliever outside, what is their life like? Are they trying to attack me right now? Therefore, I'm going to respond in kind, forgetting that I don't battle against flesh and blood, because that's exactly what Satan wants. It's us to be divided and see people outside of the image of God. They're
this idea of biting and devouring that Paul talks about in Galatians. It's not good. Is there another comment? I see a hand. No. Oh, Pete. Oh, we need the runner over there.
So if you're in youth group, you've heard this before, because I've said it many times. But my mom's been gone for 35 years, but one of the abiding things that I remember that she said to me was, and I was, you know, young and just getting into business and just getting out of college, et cetera, when she passed away. But one of the things she said to me was, Peter, you have two ears and one mouth, and you should use them in that proportion. And I cannot tell you, I mean, it's at least once a day and probably many more times than that. So, and I've given that advice to people too. Sometimes it's, you know, better to, you know, I think quickness to hear should really be eagerness to hear. It has that connotation of, I should be eager to hear what you have to say. You know, and we're talking about husbands and wives, but it should be that way with everybody we interact with. Because the only way we can react is if we understand. And the only way we can understand is if we hear, if we really hear.
Yep. I agree. Communication is key in everything. So yeah, look, you know, just some, you know, stop doing what you're doing, turn off whatever's on, look at the other person with the intent to hear, and then you can say things like, tell me more. I'm not getting it all. Tell me more. Give me more description. I want to understand what you're saying here, and be sincere about that and honest about that. The next point here, slow to speak, as we're looking at the implications in communication, in solving problems, building bridges, is to be slow to speak. It's a thoughtful communication. Think before I speak. Think about what I just heard and process that and then deliver. Don't be hurried in your response. Be gentle. Derek was saying, being kind, gentle in your response. Don't be reactive. right? Respond, don't react to the person, not the problem. About the problem, you're discussing that, but respond properly. Don't react in a negative way. It's Ephesians 4:15, speaking the truth in love idea. And so what does that look like in a marriage? What are some of the practical examples here? You can feel free to speak up here. What are the implications, practical examples in marriage that come with this idea? Chris, go ahead.
I think it's important to ask questions. For more clarity, you can gain another level of depth when you ask questions within a conversation, because a person will reveal their heart as you ask questions so that you could better understand their position and put yourself in their position as well. I mean, as Al was saying it too, I was thinking about the understanding aspect is also the empathy. You know, I need to understand where you're coming from and what you mean by what you say, so that I can give you a proper answer or, speak in a way that that you know that I understand you.
Yeah, amen. Oh, John. Right behind you, John.
Didn't know I couldn't talk. One of the things that can be helpful is if you're having trouble communicating with someone, write it down. That way you can get your thoughts down if the person's not necessarily a great listener. Jack and I deal with a couple of people that are not great listeners, and we get shut down all the time by, I didn't even get a sentence out. But writing things down, if it's important, write it down, especially if it's a issue you want to teach the person, like this is hurtful or this is not a good way to approach this, or here's my thoughts on it. Because whenever you're communicating verbally, the first sentence you get out, that other person is thinking, what's the response? And so you don't even get a paragraph out. So writing things down can be very, very helpful.
No, that's good. That's good wisdom right there, is coming with a notepad or making a notebook before you come to an issue. I can get off track very easily. As John was saying, you get somebody and you say one word and they just go on for, 10 or 15 minutes, and it's like, all right, where was it? Why did I come here? But at least it gives you a note you can look at and say, okay, let's go back to this point, because you really want to address it. That's why you're calling the meeting in the first place, was to address it. Yeah, don't get off track. So I think sometimes it's handy to have a notepad with you and say, these are the points I want to discuss.
Or just write to that person and say, here.
You could do that, but in a conversation, it's good to have a bullet point to go back on, because I can get distracted sometimes, and then you never get there, Jess.
I just wanted to say, I remember when Joe and I used to meet with Terry and Rebecca, and we had trouble at times communicating or listening. One thing that they would say to us is, when you say something to the other person, repeat back what they're saying, is this what you're saying?
Is
this what you mean? That way you're hearing everything, you're fully understanding it, and then you can respond. But take your time to fully understand what they're saying first.
Yep. No, repeat back. Is this what I'm hearing? Is this what you're saying? No. Okay, try it again until we get it. Yeah. Derek?
Yeah, just to piggyback off that, I mean, Katie and I would meet with Terry and Rebecca too, and just one thing they said was, remember who your spouse is. Just, I think that's someone who's an extrovert, golden retriever, verbal processor, who's just thinks as he speaks. Katie's not like that. She is very different. She takes time to process, and sometimes I'm like, come on, and I just learned I need to be patient. I need to remember who she is and be patient, and saying that back to her and asking questions is something I am always learning how to do, because sometimes I want to get to an answer fast, but I need to allow her to have to process the information and to feel the things she needs to feel. I mean, I need to give her the space to do that, or else if I shut her down, then I'm not allowing her to feel like she can talk to me. And when I do that, I don't want to shut her down.
That's a good thing. So yeah, the cold, quick to hear and slow to speak, for the active listening and repeating back what the person said, it does create an environment for the other person, for both people actually. It's the idea of bringing kind of like a safe time that you can talk, safety zone, where you can just talk to one another. Also support, it helps us to support one another. And then, and when your spouse sees you actively listening like this, trying to understand, maybe there's some pain, frustration, emotional things going on. When a person sees that without interruption, they can speak without interruption, I think it communicates a love and a respect and a support for the other person. And that's big. And we all need that. Everybody wants to be understood. We all want to be supported, understood, loved, respected, and that kind of thing. So it just, lowers the defensiveness. The inner lawyer is fired. He's not on the case anymore. Doesn't come out because you're seeking love in a loving relationship. It lowers defensiveness and opens the door for real communication. So it's important to speak here and speak well, and also to be receptive instead of putting up a defense. You hear the phrase, I have to walk in eggshells all the time. That shouldn't be the case. You shouldn't have to. But sometimes we do because the other person is just like, you breathe the wrong way and they you got the dagger eyes on you. And so it shouldn't be the case. We should be quick to hear, quick to speak. Unhurried and gentle, as was said already. But instead of blurting out something like, maybe it's household duties that have to get done or something, instead of blurting out, that's unfair, I do a lot. I do everything around here. I do a lot. You don't do anything. Instead of doing that, say something like, I hear you're overwhelmed. I get that sense. And so let's kind of divide up the work. Let's divide this up. Let's figure out a way to get this right. So there's two responses there versus anger and kind words. So the next one here, slow to anger. We've been looking at that, talking about that back and forth, but the slow to anger is in the context of marriage and relationship building, it's conflict de-escalation. We want to de-escalate the conflict. So if you take responsibility for your emotional temperature and response, refusing to allow bitterness, resentment, explosive anger to control the conversation, this keeps the atmosphere safe. A safe place to talk, safe place to communicate, and be heard. Honest discussion. And so in a practical way in marriage, being slow to anger, when your spouse says something or your friend says something to you that's hurtful, what do you do? Well, you step away. Step away from it. Can you, you're familiar with poker, right? The game Poker Face, where you can't read the person. That's who you want to be. You want to be body language, facial expressions, rolling of the eyes, huffing, puffing. It's just not helpful. So we want to be slow to anger, be taking a step back and say, let's table this. Let's talk about this. Another time, you need 10 minutes. Let me cool down a little bit. My mind is going places it shouldn't. So let's take a break and come back and talk respectfully to one another. Be sure so you got to guarantee that. Maria, do you have a hand up or yeah for a comment? Okay.
Chris after.
Okay, I just want to say that you mentioned the word de-escalating and. I want to say that rather than to de-escalate, you prevent any conflict at all, which is incredibly difficult. But for being married for 28 years, I know very well what my gestures and my face expression can trigger the conflict. And rather than to let it happen, I don't want to do this. My sinful nature says, oh, you should say this. And then I said, no, please don't say. And everybody I said, I regretted it later. And they said, I knew I shouldn't have said this, but still my sinful nature said it. But if I want to be obedient to God, that I should prevent the conflict to happen generally.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how many of you been married a while, have been offended by your spouse? All hands will go up. But how many of you heard your spouse say something that, you know, you forgave them, it's always behind you, but you can still remember those stinging, biting words that just, you know, you don't dwell on it, but it's there. I mean, our memory is like, it's like that computer chip that just, you know, it's like the internet. Once it's on the internet, it never goes away kind of thing. It's out there. It's like pulling that trigger on and the bullet goes out of the barrel. It's not coming back. So, yeah, we have to work on these things, not triggering people, be careful to how we speak, what we say, because, you know, we say things, it goes in, and sometimes it's very difficult to get it out. So we want to guard against that, because I don't want it done to me. It's been done to me, and you know, I don't like it. I can remember things that I don't want to remember, but, you know, there's no bitterness there. It's just there. I don't want it in there. Any of that go on in your brain?
Yeah.
Your spouse has said something in the past. It could be way back, and still, you know, it hurts, doesn't it? So with that hurt, I should be talking to you, knowing that I don't want to do that to you, because it was done to me. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. And so, was there another comment? Chris, go ahead.
You both said something that was, Derek did, then you did, that gave a paradigm of how to live with your wife in an understanding way. You were listening when she had said, or when they would say, well, I do all this and you don't do anything. You asked the question, well, what is she saying? And then you pinpointed it when you said, well, she's overwhelmed. Okay, she's saying this now because she's overwhelmed. And I think that's a really good point and a way to kind of step aside from the moment in the heat of that that back and forth to find out, well, what is she saying? And as the husband who is commanded to love her in an understanding way, what's she saying? How can I help her? And I think that was very good. Both of you said it. And it really is, it's sticking with me and it's helping me to think through that.
Yeah, that's good. Thanks for that. Any other comments? All right, so, and then one final point. Oh, John, go ahead.
I think an important thing in where the workload of life, people get concerned about how it's divided up, is to step back and remember, marriage is not a 50-50 relationship. It's, you know, if that's your attitude, what's going to happen when one spouse or the other needs a lot of care? I can think of a couple of times where Jackie took pretty good care of me, and even a couple of times when we had to try to take care of each other because we were both really sick at the same time. But it's not a 50-50, and that's not, love would never come up with that division.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you've got to care for the person whether they're capable or not.
It's 100-100. It's two-way street, right? It goes both ways. So, yeah, so the other thing we see in this verse, the last thing is anger hinders righteousness. James says that. The goal of godly conflict, you acknowledge that winning an argument is less important than preserving the unity, peace, and respect of your covenant of marriage, your covenant relationship. A fight won through harsh words is a spiritual loss. You just lost right there. You lost it. So you want to have a spirit, you want to have a win, you're going to lose if it's done in arrogance. If you want to win for Christ with, as we've been talking about, patience, kindness, and good words, then that's a win. So the idea of an example in marriage, you intentionally lay aside you a minor grievance and you focus on the major issue that requires a resolution, knowing that petty anger does not please God. And then, if you can turn here, we're going to close here. We only got a couple minutes, but 1 Peter 4:7-8, you can turn there if you want to, he says this, the end of all things is near. Therefore, be of sound judgment, be sober and sober spirit for the purpose of prayer. And above all, keep fervent in your love for one another, because love covers a multitude of sins. So I was reading this verse and I thought, well, why does he say in the beginning of verse 7, the end of all things is near? That's an eschatological statement, right? When you're having a marriage conflict or a conflict with a friend, singles, same thing. The end is near. So when we interact with one another, we should be considering, you know what? The end is near. It could be happening any second. How do I want to be found with one another in our own personal eschatology? When I die, that's it. I'm going. It's the end of time for me. But we also have a Christ who's coming back. Our Christ is coming back, and the end of all things is near. It's that eschatological urgency to make things right, to think things right. Time is limited. The time for living self-indulgent and being self-serving, it's described in the preceding verses. It's over. Those days are over in Christ. We must use the remaining time to honor God and prepare for Christ's return and the final judgment. So our interactions with one another are really important. It has a serious and sober tone here in Peter. The end is coming. Be focused on that. Be of sound judgment, sober spirit for the purpose of prayer, verse 7. Having a clear, self-controlled mind, and it's necessary for effective prayer, which is essential for spiritual strength, especially in times of suffering and interpersonal conflict, persecution, which the audience was going through at this time. So, and then he says in verse 8, keep fervent in your love for one another. Love is the primary action in light of the end, as it covers a multitude of sins. And so that's what love does. So you have to have your pound of flesh, or can you just say, not important? Not important. Let it go. And so it's critical for maintaining a unity. And this is the central theme here, that it connects directly to the topic of conflict and preserving godly relationships. This is how we do it. So last comment here is that Peter, he uses the belief of in Christ's imminent return as the incentive for sober thinking, prayer, deep connection, active love, active listening in the Christian community here in the church. And so the end being near means we must stop quarreling with one another, stop fighting over minor issues, and focus on the eternal priorities. So we don't overlook everything, but the little minor things got to go. You got to stop every little thing, pecking, picking, nagging. And so we'll pick it up again next week. We're out of time. So thank you for listening. Thank you for being here. I hope this material is helpful for many of us. It's a reminder. For some of it's reminder. Some of it's new. So, but consider how we act with one another. So.